All right, hi everybody, and welcome to Lecture 73 in this American History program of History at Our House for the junior and senior high class. Our topic today is the Civil War, Part 1. And our goal today is to talk about two things. We're not going to look at the actual events of the Civil War just yet, and even when we do, we're not going to spend an awful lot of time focusing on them. What we're going to do today is we're going to try to get an anchored understanding of the importance of the Civil War, to kind of boost what we've been talking about recently about the importance of it. Then we're going to talk about how it came about, why it should be, in a sense, that America would end up in that predicament. How come it came to that? Now, you already have a pretty decent idea because we've been watching this progression, this what I call growth and decline of the Union. So we're observing that, and it's becoming obvious that this is a society that is falling apart, in a sense, and it's not working as designed, and so something's got to give here. But an interesting question is, why a civil war? Why that particular outcome? So we're going to look at that in particular. But before we get there, I've been musing quite a bit lately over the importance of the Civil War. And so I wanted to start what might be an interesting segment, a little bit of maybe informal kind of research assignment maybe you guys want to do it. I don't know if I'm going to require it at all. But I've made a map, and I'm going to post this to the class webpage, and it looks like this. Let me minimize that for a second. So remember this map of this gray map that we used before, for instance, when we were talking about globalization and stuff, right? And I had you draw connections between you and the rest of the world. Well, this map is slightly modified, and it is a map of the world imagining that there hadn't been a civil war. And so the map has one huge difference on it. It doesn't look all that huge from this distance, right? But nonetheless, it is huge. So here's the world as it is today. And if there hadn't been a civil war, well, here's the world as it would be today. And so hopefully you're able to glean the important part, which is in America, of course. And so what we have there is the existence of a different country. Had there not been a civil war, the United States would have become two countries. Plain and simple. So we're going to talk about today the mechanism whereby the Civil War occurred. And it has to do with a concept called secession. And whether or not that was the key idea that led to there being a Civil War. If we have secession, in other words, or the verb is to secede. Sounds a lot like succeed, but you have to watch out in your pronunciation. If the southern states had seceded, and then, this sounds funny, and then succeeded in forming a country and surviving as a country, then the world map on a certain, if we change nothing else, of course, but this is kind of where I want to take our discussion for starters today, is if we make this change, so let me just obviously highlight this change, right? If we make this change to the United States, take that part away, then my question for you, which I'm going to make an optional homework assignment, see if anybody wants to take it on. So I'm not going to require it because it's a little bit of a, it's a speculative kind of assignment. Okay. So, but here it is. My question for you is, if you want to try this out, is I want you to take this world map now that this change exists and tell me what else is different. I want you to redraw the rest of the map because of that. Now, as I said, that's very speculative because you have to know what has happened since, right? So I want to encourage you to do it. I'm not going to require you to do it because it's very speculative. But what would be different about the rest of the world? And to help you do that, I've updated the, let me go to it now. I've updated the class webpage. So I'm going to take, I got to go to the junior and senior high version of this, just a second. It's going to take me a sec to go there. And we'll bring up on the class webpage, there is a new AngerFact timeline. So give me a second here to navigate to that. Oh, for crying out loud. Come on. Why is it taking so long? Okay. There we go. Okay. And if we go to March, and we go to the bottom, then we have updated AngerFact timeline with the Civil War and World Wars. Okay? And so here it is. And the change, which we are going to study, and this is definitely a true, you know, a good set of additions to the AngerFact timeline, the change is up here, of course. Right? It's not only the Civil War. Then we have World War I, then we have World War II, and there are other things. And the question for you then is, a giant kind of what if. What would the world look like today if there had not been a civil war? That's your what if question. What would the world look like today if there had not been a civil war? So I think that once you draw this line here, you change lots of other lines. And you change not just where the lines are, but you change the character of the entire world. So that's the thing to kind of to wonder about. And I just wanted to spend 5-10 minutes maybe just encouraging you to speculate about that. Does anybody have any initial speculations concerning this, you know, this outcome? That today, not only do Bria and Mr. Powell and Ben and who else, but by a show of hands, who would be living in the Confederate States of America today? So half the class, including Mr. Powell, would be living in, not in the United States of America, but in the Confederate States of America. So, of course, we wouldn't even have a history at our house today because nobody, no self-respecting history at our house client living in the United States would want to hire Mr. Powell as a history teacher if he was a Confederate. So never mind that this entire class would not exist. That's our world that would be different. The rest of half the class here would be living in the Confederate States of America. Okay, so that's kind of a personal version of it. But what do you think about world history? Any thoughts about that? Any kind of initial speculations? Timothy, what do you think?
I think there's a possibility that America would not exist today.
Oh, yes, I absolutely agree with you. In fact, if you draw this line, I think you end up drawing other lines here. I absolutely agree with you, Timothy. So that's a really great start. Is imagine drawing this line, but can you draw this line without drawing other lines? That becomes a very important question, and I don't think so. I don't think so. So that's powerful. So that's one thing to consider is, are there not other lines here? I think there are. I think the United States as such does not exist anymore. We're going to talk about that today because of the issue of secession. So, like, I keep you returning to that word. So that's one thing. Any speculations about the rest of the world? Timothy's got a speculative bent. Go ahead, Timothy.
Well, first, I think that there would be there would still be slavery in all the countries, but I also think that possibly like Britain or another country could step in and conquer America because it would be in chaos.
Yeah, okay, so possibly. All right, but that still refers to the situation in the United States and whether or not the United States would be a viable country if the secession had occurred and not resulted in a civil war. Okay, so, but I'm thinking of, for instance, does anybody have any thoughts about World War I and World War II or other things like that? Bria, go ahead.
America was kind of like a guideline. If America was being weird about it and was not having a difference between having slavery and not having slavery, then there's a possibility that other countries would be like, well, if they can't decide, why are we going to even try?
That's a really great point, Bria. So it's not about the issue of where the lines are. How about this? Brazil did not abolish slavery until 1888. And so that follows the example of the United States abolishing slavery. Does Brazil abolish slavery in 1888 if America still has slavery? Big question. Really big question. Hard to answer. Yes, the influence of the United States on the other cultures of the world radically changes. And the Confederate States of America start to impact the rest of the world. And they have a foreign policy. And is that foreign policy going to be consonant with the American foreign policy? And is that going to be, or are they going to be enemies? Alexander, why can't I unmute you? Unmute yourself, buddy. Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can now. You're in a limbo there, but now I can hear you.
That's weird because my internet is being really slow, so to me it looks like I'm still muted.
Oh, okay.
I was thinking about the space age and the Cold War and the relations with Russia. So, like, most of the spacey stuff happened in, like, Houston and Florida and places like that.
Yeah. Okay, right. So that's kind of modern, and that's an interesting speculation. What about the space age? What about America's Cold War with the Soviet Union? Is there a Cold War? Now, that partly comes back to, mute yourself again, Alexander, that partly comes back to this. So let me just aid you in your speculation for a little bit. That partly comes back to World War I and World War II. I have something interesting to show you. The man most responsible for the United States entering World War I was President Woodrow Wilson. If we go to the Wikipedia webpage on Woodrow Wilson, we learn that he was born in Virginia. We learn that his father served in the Confederate Army. So what does that tell you? Does this man become president of the United States? And does he lead the United States into World War I? Absolutely not. He's a Southerner. His father fought on behalf of the Confederate States. So he's a Southerner. He does not become president. He does not lead the United States into World War I. I guarantee you, the Confederate States of America do not join World War I. Now, whether or not the United States joins is another matter. However, Woodrow Wilson is not the president. And so the United States does not change its foreign policy. It does not become a country that tries to make the world safe for democracy. He did that pretty much single-handedly. That's a huge difference. What if the United States does not join World War I? Does it join Then we have lots of speculation. Is there a World War II? Let's just try to keep it simple. Let's say there is still World War I and then World War II. Let's say things go pretty much the same way, and there is a World War II. Then what does the world look like if Hitler succeeds and the Empire of Japan rises? And there's none of this. This thing that a lot of people bemoan, the United States defeats Japan, drops atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, Japan becomes a benign member of the world and an ally of the United States, Germany is defeated, America launches the Cold War against Russia. What happens there? What's different about the world today? None of that happens. So I think that if you don't have the Civil War, now, here's something else about the Civil War. When people do things a lot, when people repeatedly do something, what do we call that? Practice? We know it's experience. You get good at it, right? America became a country quite adept at modern warfare through the Civil War, and started to become a more powerful and important country in the world because of that. So the United States is not the same country, would not have been the same country, had it not fought the Civil War and learned all the lessons with and developed all the technology and become more advanced and more ambitious in the world by accomplishing all those things. So then, does it enter World War I? Does it become a powerful superpower in the world? I don't think so at all. I think it stays out because it's not capable, or it doesn't make the same change. It doesn't have the same role. It's not a superpower. It does not enter World War II. And that means Hitler succeeds, the Japanese Empire succeeds. And what does the world look like today? Think about that. Isn't that a staggering thought? So that's the speculation. That's the speculation. If you want to have fun with this map and you take it, and what you do is, try to draw the map of the Japanese Empire over here. All these countries don't exist. China does not exist because it's conquered by Japan. Indonesia doesn't exist, conquered by Japan. All of these, everything here is conquered by Japan. The Soviet Union doesn't exist because it's conquered by Germany. And what else? What else does the world, different? Brazil still has slavery. I mean, if you label this map and change the borders, and maybe the European empires in Africa still exist, change the map of the world without the Civil War. Isn't that a staggering thought? So, like I said, informal homework assignment. I will post this map to the webpage and see what you can come up with. And I will make mine. So, by Thursday, I'll put my map on, or maybe next Monday we'll make it. I'll put my map up and show you what I think the world would look like if there had not been a civil war. Just a neat kind of speculation. And what's good about that kind of present-centrically, remember, is to understand and appreciate the importance of something in shaping the world that we live in. I think the Civil War is one of the most crucial events in all of history, and it's an anchor fact of the world that we live in, beyond the fact of whether or not slavery exists at all in the United States today. Well beyond that, it really literally shapes the entire world. And how is the question? It's huge. I think it's absolutely huge. Alexander, put your hand down unless you still have a question or comment. All right. Neat one. Let's see. Did I say everything that I wanted to say there? Yeah. Let me just point out. Is it the right time to do it? Yes. One interesting question is, how much slavery would there be in the world today? And you know, as opposed to the fact that America abolished? It's an interesting question. Because Britain and France abolished slavery before America did. So that's, they took positive steps. They were the first. I mean, the northern states were first, and then the British Empire, and then the French Empire abolished slavery within their territories. So, and then the United States as a whole. So that was kind of the sequence. And then other countries did, Brazil in 1888 and stuff like that. So there was a sequence there of the abolition of slavery on a global scale. And so one question is, how much slavery would there be in the world today? And an interesting way to answer that is to look at what's called the Constitution of the Confederate States of America. When they left the country, when the South seceded, and we'll look at the details of it, they made a constitution, just like the original United States. And in that constitution, slavery is explicitly defended. And if we scan down to this particular segment, which I think is the most important one, Section 9 of Article 1 in the Confederate States of America laws, this is the very important section because it says, ignore this, these are details here. No law, that Congress shall make no law denying or impairing the right of property in Negro slaves. Okay, so it's right there in the Constitution of the Confederate States. The Constitution says there will be no law impairing the right of slaves. Not the right of slaves, the right to hold slaves as property. And so, in order to change that, in order to change that within the Confederate States, what would have had to happen? Well, the same process as in the American Constitution. Article 5, Section 1. Amendments to the Constitution require 2/3 of the states. So the Confederate States of America ended up with 11 states, and that means you would have needed 8 of them to achieve a supermajority out of 11. So all you needed within the South to prevent amendments to the Constitution and the removal of slavery was 4 states holding out. 4 states holding out. See how difficult that would have been now? Because not only did they secede and they all had slavery, but then even if over time their cultures changed and some of them wanted to get rid of slavery, what would have happened? It would have required only 4 of them to block it. And the supermajority would not have been possible. So would there still be slavery in the South? I think so. I think so. That is a scary, scary thought. But I think so. Because they were so committed to it. And unfortunately, you know, Woodrow Wilson's father was a chaplain. He was a Presbyterian minister. And he would tell you that the Bible is, you know, there's no problem there. You can have slaves. It's all over the place. And religion doesn't say you can't have slavery. You just have to treat them nicely. So there was plenty of reason to suspect, just culturally speaking, that slavery would have continued. And it was so entrenched. It was a part of the culture of the South, which you can see if you watch the movie The Gone with the Wind, which is such an important novel to study in conjunction with American history. I think it would have persisted, even with all the technology that we have. Technology doesn't free people as such. It can be used for good and for ill. And so I think there would still be slavery in the Confederate States. And I think the United States would not exist. And I think that the rest of the world would be a disaster. So that's my brief take on the importance of the Civil War. It's pretty staggering. It's pretty staggering. It's no, I don't think there's any way to exaggerate the importance of the Civil War. So what happened? Why do we have a Civil War? Well, the man most responsible, let me take us back to our images for the day here. The man most responsible is Abraham Lincoln. His role is absolutely pivotal in this story. And so recall what happened after the Dred Scott case. Recall what happened after the Dred Scott case. We were at this situation in 1854. And the green was what principle again? It's reminding us here. Keen, go ahead.
Popular sovereignty.
Popular sovereignty.
The people living there get to vote.
Okay, right. But then, because of the Dred Scott case, it goes like this. Whoa, what just happened? What was the essence of the Dred Scott case? Keen again?
The Supreme Court said that the United States government can make no law or can enforce any sort of, cannot enforce no slavery within the territories, which means that while it's not explicitly allowed, it's not explicitly denied either.
Mm-hmm, exactly. So this technically opened up this entire territory to slavery. And, well, this was just abominable. The point here is just how angry this made a lot of people. And Abraham Lincoln was one of them. So, and this is, I don't know, there's so many things that he said that are impressive and wonderful. He's definitely one of the greatest presidents. But here is one of the things that, this is one of my favorite quotes from Abraham Lincoln, pulled from a series of debates in 1860. And so Abraham Lincoln was trying to become a member of the Illinois legislature, and then later on became, ran for president. And so here he is talking about slavery's impact on American culture. And it's a very beautiful, eloquent maybe is perhaps a better expression. I'll post this to the class webpage as well. An eloquent repudiation of this era that he was living in. And a wonderful kind of summons of the essence of America in order to repudiate the compromise with slavery. He said, so I'll read the quote here. Quote, "This declared indifference for the spread of slavery, I cannot but hate. I hate it because of the monstrous injustice of slavery itself." So as you can see, he was of an abolitionist mindset. "I hate it because it deprives our Republican example of its just influence in the world." That is an impressive statement. "Enables the enemies of free institutions with plausibility to taunt us as hypocrites. Causes the real friends of freedom to doubt our sincerity. And especially because it forces so many really good men amongst ourselves into an open war with the very fundamental principles of civil liberty, criticizing the Declaration of Independence." Unquote. Amazing, amazing. So, you know, on the one hand, you get people like William Lloyd Garrison who are rightly saying, well, the Declaration of Independence is evil because it allows slavery. That's horrible. On the other hand, you have people who can laugh at America and say, well, you guys pretend to be for freedom, but you have slavery. So, you know, what kind of influence can a country like this have on the world? How can it be a champion of anything? Because it's just so permeated by hypocrisy. So, amazing. So what happened was, why do we have a civil war? Well, in 1860, Abraham Lincoln is elected president. And he's going to come into office in 1861. Now, at that point, now, here's what's kind of shocking about this. Abraham Lincoln said all these things, and he was outwardly, openly, explicitly against slavery. But he also said, there's nothing I can do about it. That was kind of the shocking thing. There's nothing I can do about it. Why? Why was he said, I hate it. I hate this thing. I hate slavery. I want to get rid of it, but I can't. Why not? Timothy, what was required to do that?
A supermajority.
Supermajority, technically, right? Two-thirds of the states would have to agree to a constitutional amendment, and then that amendment would have to be presented to the states, and three-quarters of them would have to vote in favor of it and ratify it. And so how was the United States ever to do that by any legal means? There was no way. Tragic. But this is the power of a contradiction. Very interesting kind of philosophical demonstration of the power of holding contradictions, allowing yourself to hold a contradiction. Contradictions are incredibly destructive in our thinking. If you try to hold on to it as the country, if you try to hold on to a contradiction, as in this particular example, it'll destroy everything. It can destroy everything. It proliferates into areas that you cannot contain it in your thinking. And it harms you in ways you cannot know. And so in this case, the contradiction of allowing slavery into the country, was basically going to allow the proliferation of slavery and the eradication of freedom. In order to have the Union, in order to bring those states in, we said we're going to have freedom, we're going to have slavery at the same time. No, you're not. This was not going to hold. Slavery was going to spread. There was nothing that could be done about it legally. So then, if nothing can be done about it legally, now what? Bria says fight, but right? I mean, so now what? How do you commit to making the change, let's say, illegally, extra-legally, outside of the bounds of normal civil society? See, Americans had learned to live with this. They had made their lives and kind of allowed this to continue. And now Abraham Lincoln is elected, and he says, well, we're going to have to keep doing that. So is there really going to be a civil war? Well, the astounding fact, and now I only have an older map to rely on here, so the color scheme is different, but I'll try to update my newer maps here, is in 1861, by 1861, Kansas and Oregon had actually been accepted as free states. And this is exactly what the Southerners were worried about, right? Because they were worried about being surrounded. And so following the election of Abraham Lincoln, what's different here is that the pink stuff at the bottom is not just states that have slavery, but rather states that have formally performed a certain action, namely secession. So what that means is that all these bottom states here, there were 7 of them at first and then 11 of them altogether, seceded from the Union. And that's our key word as to why we're going to get the Civil War. Secession. So, that one we got to be clear on. What is secession? And if we understand what it is, and we are clear on what it would mean for a country to permit secession, then we can understand why there was a civil war. So what is secession, first of all? Timothy.
It's when you don't like the certain group that you're in, whatever that group is, you don't like it, so you decide to leave the group and form your own.
Okay, right. So that's a good kind of general usage of the term secession. If we were to kind of constrain it a little bit to this political setting, let's try to be more technical about it in regard to the United States. How would you take that broad definition, Timothy, and apply it in this context?
I'm trying to find the words.
Okay, we're dealing, I'll help you. Rather than individuals or groups, we're talking about states. Right, okay. That's our context here. States and countries.
So if you don't like the laws that a bunch of states have around you, and you don't want to be, you don't want to be in the same country as those states, you would leave the country, you would officially leave the country, and then you would, and then you would create your own country.
Right, exactly. To secede means secession, means leaving the country that you're in order to form a new one, which is exactly what the southern states did. They seceded. They formed the country of the Confederate States of America, and they said, we're not in your country anymore. We're in our own country. We have our own constitution, and that's it. We're breaking away from the United States. Now, the question is, why not allow that? Why was Abraham Lincoln, as the president, in a position to essentially be forced to say, that cannot be? Why not say to the southern states, goodbye, good riddance? We're going to have a free country. You guys have your country with slavery. Good riddance. Why not just let them go? Why is secession an impossible concept in politics? What would that entail? Think about what that would mean if secession were normal in politics. Why is it impossible? King, go ahead.
It sets a precedent where if you don't agree with what your government says, you can just opt out. And that sort of precedent doesn't really work.
Yeah, but why not? What does that precedent really mean?
That means that you basically have a choice. You can, if you don't, I don't know if this is exactly where you want me to go, but basically you can, it takes power away from the government in a sort of fundamental way where, I mean, if it can be done once, then it'll be done again on some smaller issue.
Okay, right. Your statement is very good and precise. It takes away the power of the government in a fundamental way. In other words, it literally nullifies the power of the government. It says there is no constitution, there is no country, it's just a club. And if you want to be in, you can be in, and if you don't want to, you don't have to. So secession is an impossible political concept. Because it basically means we're going to include in the entire fabric of our country an auto-destruct mechanism. Anybody that wants out, they can destroy the country at will. They can leave over different issues. So if we're getting into disagreements about things, and they're really intensely disagreeing about things. Well, you states over on the West Coast, maybe you want to join the British Empire or join Canada, so you'll secede. And maybe you people in the southern parts of the country, you've had a lot of immigration from Mexico, so maybe you want to secede and join Mexico instead. And maybe, you know, Maine wants to join Canada. Maybe, I don't know, whatever. You just, over issues or not. So what is secession as a political concept? It's an auto-destruct mechanism. It just says, yeah, countries can be made and unmade whenever you want. So, of course, Abraham Lincoln could not allow that. He could not say, yes, you can just go because we have such a different culture. And so we're going to allow you to form a separate country right next door. Never mind that. Basically, you're going to allow the formation of an enemy culture right next door as a separate sovereign nation? I mean, that was the whole purpose of the Louisiana Purchase and everything else about American independence, was you don't want to have an enemy like that right next door. This would be a disastrous premise to allow secession, to allow the states to say, no, we opt out. So when the southern states, notice that it was interesting. A lot of them, there were four plus one. Missouri, Kentucky, Delaware, and Maryland were slave states, but they opted not to secede. And when Virginia seceded, West Virginia broke away and stayed in the Union. Those are the dark blue ones here. Makes it kind of an interesting map. So they stayed. So the Confederacy was all of the pinkish magenta type colors here. They left, or at least declared their independence. The United States never acknowledged it. When that happened, Abraham Lincoln said, well, we're not going to permit it. And so we are going to retake it. It's illegal. You are in rebellion, essentially. And the authority of the federal government will be used to restore you to the Union. So tomorrow we'll look at the actual progress of the war. We'll look at how it went, and in particular, how finally the war did bring about the end of slavery. It's actually not going to happen until the war is over that slavery will be completely and formally abolished. But it is going to come about as a direct consequence of the war. And it's very important how that unfolds. So we'll see that. All right, so that's for tomorrow. Like I said, I'm going to put this map on the class webpage. And invite you to create a speculative world map. I'll do one of my own just for fun as well, just to give you my thoughts. And you can color things and you can, for themes about slavery or empires or whatever. How would the world be different today? I think it would be staggeringly different. And all of it for the worse. Staggeringly different and all of it for the worse. So to me, that just reinforces what an amazing and positive thing the Civil War is, at least. And it's a war, and it's horrible by itself, but as a step in history, as a period in history, it was very positive. All right. Thanks, folks. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye for now.